or late winter storm, many of us living in Chico will be visited by raccoons. If you live in a house near one of our creeks or flood channels, or if you live in the foothills or orchards, chances are raccoons will be checking out your property. WildCare, a wildlife rehabilitation and education center in Marin County, had a great article last year about raccoons that taught me a lot about raccoon behavior and biology, so I thought we'd share it. The more we know about wildlife and the environment around us, the better we can coexist. So in that vein, this show is dedicated to raccoons. I think it's easier to have empathy for other creatures when you understand their needs and their biology. And that's just human nature, right? I think we have empathy for children, and we want to protect them, partly because we were all children at some point. So we sort of remember how we felt about how we were treated and how we wanted to be treated. And this comes up over and over when we talk about how the animals that we eat. We find it very hard to have empathy for cows and pigs because generally we don't know them as individuals. But as a culture, we find it much easier to have empathy for dogs and cats because so many of us live with them and know them and care for them as individuals. So let's get started with a little background on the ubiquitous and adorable trash panda. To start with, to fully understand raccoons, you need to put yourself in the mindset of a toddler, say the experts at WildCare, the preeminent wildlife rehabilitation and education center. They're located in San Rafael, and you can find them at discoverwildcare.org. The rehabbers there find that raccoons are perpetual toddlers. They are incredibly curious, ready to get into just about anything, resourceful, intelligent, and without a care in the world. Like many monkeys, including ourselves, raccoons have a highly developed brain, which makes them curious and adaptable. And they can strategize and solve problems, and they can share their methods with other raccoons, even those who are not part of their immediate region or family group. Wildlife biologists studying raccoons have found that city raccoons are smarter than country raccoons because we humans have taught city raccoons to overcome many obstacles. We're figuring all sorts of ways to keep them out of the trash, or they're finding food in odd places or shelter in odd places, and so they're continually being challenged to explore their novel environment.
I mean, for sure, I think anyone who's seen raccoons in the evening knows they use our storm drains and gutters as their highway, and you see them just plop right in or pop right out, and they know, and they all follow each other, and you know.
When they're of a certain size, when they get to be adults, I think it's a little tougher to squeeze down into those storm drains. But yeah, I'll never forget. I was leaving work. I used to work downtown, and I was leaving work pretty late, like 10 p.m. or something, with some project due. And I stepped out. There was no traffic around. And lo and behold, there's like three raccoons crossing 4th Street, and they plopped down into one of the storm drains and disappeared. Yeah, because in the summer, our storm drains are just basically underground highways for these guys.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a very smart thing to do. And, you know, had a stray cat once and was leaving food in the back, and pretty quick, you know, a raccoon showed up. And, as they will. So, all right. Some other fun facts about raccoon biology. Their brains are dedicated to processing information from their paws, that is, tactile information. Whereas human brains are mostly dedicated to processing visual information, you just think about basically our eyes are literally nerves that go right into our brain's visual center. Raccoon brains are dedicated to interpreting the world from their sense of touch, more so than most other animals. For example, raccoon paws are 10 times more sensitive than human hands. Like, I can't even imagine what that means. Even though their little hands are much smaller than ours, they are not only they are able to actually sense objects before touching them, and they can identify them because they have an array of little hairs above each claw that gives them information. And before they've even touched their hand, they've got stimulation from those nerves telling them what's going on. The raccoon brain translates that information from their sense of touch into a picture. I'd be curious to know how they know that, but I'm assuming somebody kind of figured this out. So they can see what they're touching without looking at it with their eyes, which is pretty cool. This means that while their hands are busy figuring out what they're touching, their eyes can be scouting around for other things that are capturing their interest or to look out for predators, which is a pretty important thing. Raccoons use smell to communicate with each other. Scent marks are used to establish home ranges and for individuals to identify each other. Raccoons also use communal latrine sites to communicate between individuals in a shared territory. And I know that, of course, frustrates people whose shed might become that communal latrine site, but that's why it's you need to close access off to your shed. It's like raccoons are just doing what any animal is going to do with that space. But wait, there's more. Not only do raccoons have communal latrines, they also have shared playgrounds and sleeping areas. Those are much more fun to talk about. Yes, they have shared playgrounds where they gather just to mess around or, you know, raccoon around, however you like to say it, because, after all, they are just perpetual toddlers. So, yeah, I like raccoons, man. I don't know what to say. I get very sad with all the raccoons that, you know, are killed as roadkill around here, and you can see sometimes that it was like, you can kind of see the crime scene of, like, you could see the baby got hit and that the mother was coming back and that the other ones came out and there's, like, a whole family that gets killed. And it's, you could tell that they really are taking care of each other, you know, even though they're not always making it.
They're sticking together.
They're sticking together, you know.
Yeah. So this gives you a sort of a snapshot of what raccoons are like. They are toddler-like, which is not to say, however, that we should be approaching them and making them pets or trying to pet them or anything like that. They are well able to defend themselves, and we will get to that.
Like most wild animals, they're sort of slaves to their hormones, and
even
though they're toddlers, they're still going to bite you.
So thank you, Danny. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. Today's show is dedicated to raccoons, the masked bandits of chicken coops and trash cans. In addition to an amazing sense of touch, raccoons also have excellent hearing. Not only can they hear very high-pitched sounds, they can also hear very quiet sounds. They can actually hear worms and grubs moving underground, which is why we find our lawns with raccoon divots dug out of them as they're hunting grubs under the grass. WildCare, the Wildlife Rehabilitation and Education Center in San Rafael, reports that many homeowners will get into conflicts with raccoons without even realizing that the real cause of the problem is that the homeowner has grubs in their lawn. Getting rid of the lawn grubs can keep your lawn safe from hungry raccoons digging it up. By removing the attractant, that is, the grubs, that is the only way to ensure that wildlife won't linger on your property and damage your lawn. It's important to remember that without removing what attracts them, whether it's these grubs in your lawn or trash or cat food, trapping and removing the so-called nuisance animal will only leave a gap, a space for the next raccoon or other critter to move in.
Like, and I think that's, you know, to take a diversion, like, incredibly important to realize, like, all homeowners, renters, people are frustrated when some animal messes up their stuff, for a radio-friendly word. And, you know, the idea, oh, I'm just going to trap them all, I'm going to kill them all, I'm going to throw poison everywhere, it does not work. It could be squirrels digging up your yard, it could be raccoons, it could be stray cats.
Or it could be critters getting into your house, right? Like if you've got a rodent issue.
Right. You're leaving food out, you have holes into your house, you've created a habitat, and that habitat that will be exploited perpetually until you deal with that habitat. And it's an important thing to remember. And you can contact the appropriate wildlife group to understand what's going on, and they will give you tips on what you should do. But I also think, you know, we're sharing the world with these creatures, you know. I mean, we should share.
Yeah, and they've adapted to us, goodness knows, right?
Right.
So, raccoons, we'll carry on with raccoonitude.
Yeah.
Raccoons are not fast critters, so they are not great hunters. Contrary to popular belief, raccoons only occasionally eat birds and mammals. They prefer to eat easier-to-catch critters like fish, frogs, and insects, and they will break into chicken coops. So for you backyard hen folks, they will break into chicken coops to kill and eat chickens, ducks, and their eggs.
And for a raccoon, I'm sure they're like, thanks for the convenience store.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. And while they're not fast, they do have endurance. They have been known to swim for hours if pursued. I'm sure that's an unfortunate circumstance. And they're also very protective. You definitely don't want to corner them, or they will fight back and defend themselves. Mother raccoons, in particular, are great moms and are very protective of their babies, which are called kits. Wildlife rehabbers have successfully reunited lost raccoon babies with their mothers. For instance, if something happens and the mother raccoon becomes separated from her babies, that mom will come back to the area to get them. So wildlife rehabbers will plan to leave the baby out in a certain area and keep an eye on him or her until hopefully mom comes back and to scoop up her kid. So perhaps Perhaps you've heard about raccoons having rabies and are concerned about that. Well, believe it or not, in California, only 3 raccoons have tested positive for rabies in the past decade. On the East Coast, there is one subpopulation of raccoon that has developed a type of resistance to rabies that allows them to incubate the rabies vaccine for rabies virus for up to a year before showing symptoms, but no California raccoon shows this rabies resistance trait. Raccoons do get distemper, however, which affects their nervous system. So if you see a raccoon wandering or stumbling around during daylight hours, it is likely that they are suffering from raccoon distemper. Next to humans, the second leading cause of death in raccoons is distemper. Raccoons are susceptible to infection by both canine and feline distemper viruses. Although both viruses can cause acute illness and death, they are caused by 2 completely different viruses. That is to say, cat distemper is very different from dog distemper. Canine distemper is a highly contagious disease of carnivores that affects animals in the dog, weasel, and raccoon families. And the virus is widespread, and the mortality in juveniles is higher than in adults. Feline distemper, which is also called feline panleukopenia, is an acute, highly infectious viral disease affecting members of the cat, weasel, and raccoon families. So weasels and raccoons are susceptible to both cat viruses and lethal dog viruses.
They drew the short straw on that.
And likewise, unvaccinated dogs and cats that are allowed to wander around unattended are at risk of infection from, as well as posing a risk to, raccoons and other wildlife.
Exactly.
Humans are not at risk from distemper, as this disease cannot be passed on to people and presents no danger to humans. All right, carrying on here. But when we were talking about those communal latrines, those communal bathrooms that raccoons fancy, as they do in their raccoon-like way.
I mean, that's an evolved trait, you know, to put your poop somewhere else and not just everywhere and not sleep in it. You know,
yes.
They're picking a latrine. It's far away from where they sleep, and they're not just, you know, spreading it everywhere. That's pretty wise.
So you want to stay away from those things. You want to stay away from these communal latrines.
Really?
or if you are going to, like, clean one up, put some gloves and a mask on before cleaning them, because raccoons do carry a particularly nasty type of roundworm called Bacillus ascaris, or raccoon roundworm, and this is transmissible to people and can make you really sick, but it doesn't happen that often. There have only been 22 reported cases in the U.S. between 1973 and 2010. But like, you know, basically, if you're out with your kids, I would say in particular, you wanna be sure what your kids are getting into.
I'd suggest if you're cleaning up any pile of feces anywhere to wear gloves and a mask. It's good common practice.
This is Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Over to you, Danny. Now we have some human housekeeping tips for you and your neighborhood raccoon and other wildlife.
All right. So from December to February is raccoon mating season. This might explain the shadows I see at night. This is the time when female raccoons start to look for and prepare nesting dens to have their babies. Now is a great time to make sure that raccoons and other critters can't get under your house or deck. After it stops raining, this weekend would be a good time to seal off all your foundation and deck openings to prevent raccoons from denning under your house. This also keeps out stray cats and
skunks
and other
opossums.
Yes. So cover all openings with wire mesh, sheet metal, or concrete. Bury fencing 1.5 to 2 feet deep in areas raccoons can access by digging. If you have chicken coops, seal all the ground level openings and close the doors at night. And also use tight-fitting lids to keep raccoons out of garbage cans. Properly dispose of garbage or other food sources that will attract raccoons and almost every other living wildlife and insect that is outside. Debris such as lumber, fence posts, and junk cars do provide shelter. Get rid of these attractive or unattractive nuisances, or learn to live with what they attract. You know, my parents had a huge rat infestation in Tracy. For one, because my dad had a lumber pile that he kept. But, of course, after about 55, he did nothing with this lumber pile. It just sat there and became a rat's den. And he also liked to keep all the walnuts from the walnut tree in bags, but he didn't have the energy to crack them. So he piled up stacks of walnuts in the garage.
Oh, he was caching food for rodents.
For rats. Thousands and thousands of rodents.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a nightmare. So, you know, don't do these things.
I will say, though, if you have property Instead of like burning your woody debris, if you have property and you have the space to do it, tree trimmings and such make really great wildlife habitats. They're good places for birds and reptiles and things to hide out.
Right. There are no registered repellents specifically for raccoons, and often repellents are derived from some other animal's urine, and there's some kind of animal cruelty involved anyway, what I've noticed. But lights and sounds may provide temporary relief from raccoon activity. Most mammals, including raccoons, can sometimes be discouraged from entering certain areas with ammonia-soaked cloth, which kind of sounds obvious. But remember never to place ammonia or chemicals in an enclosed space because the fumes can be fatal to animals or anybody that, you know, wanders into that space. But as we've just noted, in the end, repellents are only a temporary measure. Permanent solutions require exclusion to these areas, getting rid of food sources and habitat.
So under these circumstances, some people may feel it necessary to hire a trapper and trap this nuisance animal. If you haven't sealed off your house or secured your garbage and taken care of the grubs in your lawn, you may think that trapping this raccoon or skunk or whatever it is may solve your problems. You may think it will, but it won't. If you have raccoons or any other wild animals on your property, it's because your property provides something they want and need. Usually what attracts them is access to one of the following: food, water, or shelter. Just what we all need as humans, too. If your property provides any of those, animals will find it, as Danny was mentioning earlier. If you decided to hire a trapper to trap and remove an animal that has moved into a cozy den space under your deck, or one that's been stopping by to eat your outside cat's leftover cat chow, you are leaving an attractively open space or easy food source on your property for the next wild creature that comes along. You can trap that first animal, but what about the next one and the next one after that? Unless whatever is attracting the animal is removed, other animals will fill that vacant space. Life finds a way. For our listeners' information, relocation of wildlife is actually a violation of California state law under the California Code of Regulations, Title 14, Section 465.5, and is an enforceable law enforcement issue. If you should hire a licensed trapper to come and trap a nuisance animal, legally, that trapper must release the animal within 100 yards of the capture site, or they must kill the animal. Those are those only options that that trapper has. And you must be aware that that trapper is not legally required to tell you either of those facts. That's right. California law requires trappers to either release a trapped animal, essentially back on your property, or euthanize that animal. There are no other options.
And that, you know, it's a pretty shocking and interesting fact to know. Like, I think you told me this in the past. I had no idea.
Yeah. Sometimes trappers do try to hide this grim fact by telling clients that they will relocate the animal to some green and happy spot, maybe out by the river. While this may sound like a good option, keep in mind that it is not legal for a trapper to relocate this animal, so most likely he, or maybe she, is lying to you and will instead kill the animal. Also keep in mind that relocation, even if it were an option, is actually incredibly cruel. Wildlife rehabbers, more than any other group of animal experts, are aware of this issue since it is the goal of every rehabber to actually release their rescued animals back to the wild. They take a lot of care where they re-release these animals, and they make sure that such a location has abundant... First, they make sure what time of year it is. Second, they make sure there's abundant food and habitat for that animal, which no trapper is going to do. So what happens in the vast majority of cases, relocation of a trapped nuisance animal results in the death of that animal. Imagine an animal removed from her den, her comfort zone, and all her known food and water sources. Imagine yourself in that situation. Imagine dropping that animal confused and terrified into another animal's territory. What do you think is likely to happen, right? The relocated animal will be beaten up and chased away and will eventually starve to death or die of exposure. In that type of situation, most wildlife will actually die. Relocation of so-called wildlife, nuisance wildlife, is never a good option to solve a wildlife problem. If you encounter a licensed trapper or individual, like a do-it-yourself homeowner, who are trapping and relocating wildlife, you do have options. The first thing to do, if you can do so safely, is to get as much information as you can about that individual and the company, and make sure you know, like, you have the name, a description of the trapper himself or herself, the trapper's license plate number, and the ID tag on the actual trap, which they are, if they're a legal licensed trapper, they're required to have like a tag on their trap. And get all that information. If you have a contract, keep a copy of your contract, and then start to make the system work. You want to let this law that exists to protect wildlife do its job. So to do that, you'd call the Department of Fish and Wildlife in our region. I'm going to post this contact information on our on the Non-Human Radio page and on our program page. You can call CalTIP, which is the California Department of Fish and Wildlife hotline. It's 1-888-334-CALTIP. And then you want to call our local agencies, like Butte County Animal Services. Or in Chico, you can call the police dispatch. And it's not a 911 call necessarily, but call the police department, and they will connect you with animal control. And then after that, you want to follow up and make sure that they have taken action against that trapper. And use social media. If you hired that trapper and you observe them doing this, post a review of the company and his or her services online. So that is, those are some things that we can do to keep this issue being properly prosecuted. For lack of a better word, to keep these trappers honest. If you feel like you've been misled, it's perfectly okay to ask the trapper to clarify. There's other regulations also. For instance, trappers are required by law to check a trap that they set every 24 hours, and if they haven't done so, they are in violation of their license. If the trap has been in the hot sun all day in our Chico summers or Butte County summers, that is also an inhumane condition, and they are required to check more frequently. That's a violation of law. You can go ahead and call Department of Fish and Wildlife and call CalTIP and call Butte County Animal Control. So that is it for raccoons, and there are trials and tribulations. For more information, check the show notes at KZFR or at the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. Over to you, Danny.
All right. In another story, KRCR Channel 7 reported that Farm Sanctuary in Orland will close its doors after 25 years of rescuing farmed animals from slaughter in California.
Oh, man.
Yes, it's been around a long time. Beginning this spring, the 246 animals will be transported in phases to Farm Sanctuary's shelter in Watkins Glen, New York. The Watkins Glen Sanctuary added 96 acres of pasture and forest land to continue its mission to protect farm animals from cruelty, to inspire change in the way society views and treats farm animals, and to promote compassionate vegan living.
That's like what we do here.
Yes, yes. The 11 Orland staff members will be offered positions at Farm Sanctuary's Watkins Glen property or the one in Acton, California, which is way down south. The move will be completed by the fall, and the 300 acres of land in Orland will be empty for the first time since 1993. The Orland Farm Sanctuary will remain open to visitors free of charge until it closes operations. Farm Sanctuary will host a farewell to Orland event on April 21st. So this is sort of a sad event for a lot of people, but I kind of understand there's probably a lot of reasons why they're doing it. I think we've observed over the years, you know, it's hot out there. They run out of water sometimes. They're on a well. It's kind of a difficult, it can be a bit difficult to keep things going there without a substantial amount of money pouring in. But it's a shame to have such a local resource move on.
Yeah, they will definitely be missed. I've been out there many, many times, and I know the Chico Vegan Meetup has organized a couple of field trips, and they'll be organizing a couple more in advance of this April 21st event. If you haven't been out to this to Farm Sanctuary in Orland, keep an eye out for those events. You may want to visit something before it's gone.
Indeed, and I think maybe another show we could talk about all the other kind of local animal and farm animal sanctuaries that are still around. That you can also visit.
Yep, absolutely.
But we should also be thankful for having had Farm Sanctuary here. All right, so now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get ready to mark your calendars.
Okay.
Here come the events.
Thanks, Danny. There are some great events to put on your calendar. Coming up on March 10th, we have the Conscious Eating Conference in Berkeley. That's Saturday, March 10th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. United Poultry Concerns is hosting the 7th Annual Conscious Eating Conference. They bring an array of excellent speakers to a location in Berkeley and share ideas about the best food choices we can make for the planet, ourselves, and other animals. Student registration is free. You can get information on this event at the Non-Human Radio Facebook page and check out the events there. On St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, the Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals, a Buddhist group, will be hosting its third cooking class for the year. That's the Cooking for Compassion and Health series. This will be on batch cooking and storage. So you get to cook like once a week, package up your food, and you don't have to cook again for the rest of the week. This class is going to be led by Nancy and Nick Matthews of, who you may recognize from Plant-Based Chico. They're the healthy, whole foods, plant-based, no salt, no added salt, oil, or sugar folks. And they'll be sharing the how-to of batch cooking and storage. So you can go ahead and check that out at brownpapertickets.com, or the event is on the Non-Human Radio events page. And what else do we have coming up? April 1st, Pancakes for Peace, hosted by our own beloved Chico Peace and Justice Center on Sunday, April 1st, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's an all-you-can-eat pancake extravaganza, notable in that they have vegan options. So I highly recommend you check that out. And that will be on April 1st, no fooling, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And you can get information on that at the Chico Peace and Justice Center website. Okay, we have one last piece of business to take care of, and that is the Animal Rights Quote of the Week.
The Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from Stuart Udall, American politician and Secretary of the Interior from 1961 to 1969 under Presidents John F. Kennedy and Lyndon B. Johnson, who wrote, quote, "Cherish sunsets, wild creatures, and wild places. Have a love affair with the beauty and wonder of the earth." Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to Guillermo Bill Mash and Sue Hildebrand for their engineering assistance and their moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next, real soon now.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind,
and go vegan.